This is the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency with information for IT professionals. For more information and to download other shows, visit ciaops.podbean.com. This is episode 16 with Matt Malkiewicz and is sponsored by Applied Marketing Technologies, the leaders in the Australian market for customer relationship management and small business networks. Visit them on the web at www.amt.com.au. Welcome along to another podcast from the Computer Information Agency. My name is Robert Crane, and in this episode I'm joined by Matt Malkiewicz from Ambition Mission and also now with SMB Nation. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you, Robert. I'm happy to be here.
Excellent. As we normally start off all these podcasts, I'm just hopeful that you can give the listeners out there a bit of a background on yourself, what you do, and where you've come from. So if you can enlighten us, that'd be great.
Certainly, Robert. Yes, my name is Matt Malkiewicz. I originally ran an IT company, turned MSP, did that for about 9 years. And after I transitioned myself out of that company, I sold it to a telecom business who was looking to get into the data area. And I spent the next 3 years doing a speaking circuit, working at conferences as a speaker, as a business consultant, as a business coach. I helped IT companies learn about managed services. I helped managed service providers become more profitable, and I worked with a lot of vendors to help them attract more partners and more managed service providers to sell their services to or through. And recently I joined the folks over here at SMB Nation and am kind of extending that role of a consultant to the industry, working with a lot of the vendors and helping them give the right message and develop their partner programs and get the word out about their programs to the community at large, to the managed service providers and so forth. And along the way, I've written 3 books, Guide to Selling Managed Services, Faster, Easier, for Greater Profit, Guide to Marketing Managed Services, Faster, Easier, for Greater Profit, and most recently, a Guide to Building a Sales Team, Faster, Easier, and for Greater Profit. So that's me, Matt Malkiewicz. You can always reach me at matt@ambitionmission.com.
Excellent. So I suppose if we hear some background noise at the moment, that's because you're busy there with SMB Nation and all the many employees there working hard, I assume.
That's true. We are in a working office at the moment, so forgive if there are some background noises.
I'm sure that your employees there are prodding you along to make the right answers. So. All right. Well, what I wanted to cover today is that I hear that you've been speaking and writing about something that I think you call the $1 million hurdle. If you can get us some information about exactly what that is.
Sure. So the $1 million hurdle is essentially the time in a company, in a growing company, where they're struggling to reach or surpass the $1 million mark. And it's not always exactly $1 million, but the way a company is run, the way things work in a company, the people that you need, the way products or services are executed, the way products or services are sold. Everything changes completely when you're just a couple of $100,000 in sales to over $1 million in sales. The operation changes completely. And the mentality that a business owner goes through and the journey that they go through and the changes that they have to make both for themselves and in the business and the decisions that they have to make can be so dramatic and traumatic that a lot of businesses fail during this transition, or they just can't figure it out. It's like they're bumping up against the wall. They can't figure out why they can't continue to do what they've been doing that has made them successful up to this point. And it's really interesting because it actually crosses outside of the IT industry into almost any small business. But it's absolutely a phenomenon that it excites me to observe it because it seems so predictable. And it's really exciting to chat with people about it and help them overcome that hurdle and understand that what they're going through is so very common out there for any business owner that is growing.
So is it simply a revenue level? I mean, can it happen to a single man operation as well as a larger company?
Probably not to a single man company. And the reason that is because a lot of the things that change right, have to do with staff and have to do with the different people in the company doing things. One of the biggest challenges with the hurdle is when you have three or four people that are doing, running the company. And, you know, everybody has more than one job. They call it multiple hats, right? And the owner has three or four hats and so forth and so on. As the business gets more robust, and as an IT company, for example, is going from having one or two new customers every couple of months to a customer or two or three or four every single month, processes, procedures, and all these things become even more important. And when these processes and procedures become more important, job duties get separated, more individuals come onto the team to help out, and things that were in people's heads and they intuitively knew how to do, or shortcuts that they made to just kind of quote unquote get it done, need to now follow certain procedures, need to be documented. And this is where things just start falling apart. So it really is not possible for a one person or organization to experience that. Because if a one person organization is, you know, having that level of revenue, they're already effectively managing outsourced individuals and companies to do everything. So that can allow them to sustain past the $1 million hurdle without all of these tumultuous change. But the staff is a real key kind of Pandora's box, if you will, of change that is thrust upon a company as they approach that level of revenue.
Okay, so obviously they're approaching that level of revenue and they're, you know, facing this hurdle. I mean, what do they need? What sort of processes do they need, you think, in place, or what needs to happen for them to get over this hurdle that you're talking about?
Well, the first thing is that they have to kind of recognize what's happening, because, and that's really probably the scariest part about this portion of this time in the evolution of their business, is it's really scary. It doesn't feel like, oh, I'm approaching this natural obstacle or this natural hurdle where everything changes. Oh, okay, I recognize this and I understand it and let me do these things. That's not the feeling that they get unless they're listening to this podcast. And even then, that's probably not the feeling that they get. What it comes across at is paranoia, fear, loss of control. And it's all these emotional feelings that this business that you built all of a sudden is no longer in your control. There was a time when you had a personal relationship with every single customer that was involved in your business. And that no longer is the case. You don't know everything that's happening in your company. And some things happen innocently that make you angry, make you mad. That's not the way I wish it was done. And so you try to control it further, and that, of course, is self-defeating. And then there's this paranoia that sometimes is involved with, are my staff members conspiring against me, and they're trying to do a coup and take over the company? And all of these really, I mean, it's funny if we think about it, but these are real deep emotions, and all of them make the business owner close down, and they don't usually have advisors that they can trust that can counsel them, that quote-unquote understand their business enough to really help them through this process. They don't seek the help. They just think that they need to just, you know, put their head down and keep trying. And it's this emotion and fear, and it can be really paralyzing, Robert. It can really destroy a company from within, because it can become that self-fulfilling prophecy.
So, in your experience, you know, how would someone recognize that they're at this hurdle? What are some of the symptoms that they should be looking at to say, look, yes, I am at this point?
Well, I'll tell a funny story. There's a partner friend of mine, and as they were approaching this hurdle, you know, their company was doing some really great things. They were making a name for themselves out there. They were attending conferences. I came back from a conference one time in Las Vegas, and to find out that there was a disaster that happened while he was gone. One of the customers lost some data, and they went out to one of those data recovery companies to actually get the data off drives, and he came back to this really bad customer situation and a $9,000 bill. And he was really upset. And he called all of his staff into a meeting, and he basically screamed and yelled at them and told them, and I quote, "I could have burned money while I was in Vegas, and it would have been better than employing you people." So this was a real low point for this guy in his business. Morale stunk, and he really felt like he had lost control of this thing that he had built and he was so proud of. That's a sign. I mean, that's a very obvious sign, but that's a sign that you're losing control and you're at this million-dollar hurdle. Losing your temper, finding that people that you once trusted, you don't trust at all, thinking that people are conspiring against you, not being okay with letting go and having the fact that you don't know everything, making you uncomfortable. These are all things that are signs that you're going through the million-dollar hurdle or you're approaching the million-dollar hurdle. And it's not exactly a million, like we said, but it's that point in the evolution of the business.
Okay, so if you could now, if people now recognize they're at that, you know, that breaking point or at that hurdle, or you know, that they finally they do recognize that they need help, what course of action do they need to start taking? Do you think?
So the probably the best thing that they need to do is once they recognize that this is something that is normal thing that happens in companies is to really, you know, have kind of a, what they call a call to Jesus meeting, right? Where let's get everything out on the table and have that kind of discussion with themselves and then with their staff and say, listen, the way things have been done may not be the way we continue to do it. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, this is a point in the company where books that you can read can really help you. Books like The E-Myth by Michael Gerber, books like Who Moved My Cheese. And these are books that not only you should read as a business owner, but encourage your staff to read them or give your staff a synopsis of the books. And when people understand that the problem issues that are going on in your company are not unique to your company and they're very common, and it's ultimately a very positive thing because it signifies growth. And on the other side of it, you know, you can grow your company to about $5 million before you have to change everything again. These are positive things, but if they're framed right for the company and for the staff and for the business owner, him or herself, they have a better chance of overcoming it, a better chance of, with a clear and level head, starting to document policies and procedures that used to just be in people's heads and starting to calmly allow people the trust that they're going to do their job and understand that they might fail and have a procedure for when that happens too. And it's all about documenting this and getting comfortable with your staff and comfortable with the fact that things might be different. Staff might be different. The way you do this might be different. Nothing may remain the same, but your company's still going to grow. And that's really the key thing. It's kind of like you recognize that you have the issue and you address the issue by understanding that you're not alone in this, and then educating yourself with what the issue is all about, what the hurdle is all about, and then how you can move forward through it to the next hurdle, which is about, like I said, $5 million.
So is it something that if you do recognize it, that you should be seeking external help? I mean, should you be bringing on board somebody who can look at the whole situation, you know, in a bit more hands-off way and give you some more objective opinion on what actually needs to be done? If you're in the business, are you too close to it to actually be able to overcome this hurdle?
Well, I'm a big fan of business coaching and advisors, and in a lot of ways, you're just too close to it, just like you said. You're too close to see the problem clearly. I have had business coaches and advisors when I was running my IT business, and it was the best money I ever spent, because what happened was I had my first salesperson. I often refer to my first salesperson as my $50,000 education, because it cost me $50,000 before I realized it was a complete mistake for me to ever hire this person, because I wasn't ready. And for all the reasons why I wasn't ready and what I should have done, that's what my third book was about, right? But this was pointed out to me by my business coach. My business coach came in and said, I don't understand this person. I don't understand their role in the company. I don't understand why they're here. It doesn't make sense. And I justified it and I explained it and it made sense to them for a little bit. And over the next month, I still don't see why this person is here. And they helped me see that. And a month after they left, it was as clear as day to me that I should have never done it. And it took that business coach, it took that that outside disinterested opinion, that impartial opinion, somebody who has business experience, maybe not in my industry, that's not a requirement, that certainly helps, but they have business experience and they have a vested interest in seeing your company grow. But working with a business coach for a period of a year, once you start recognizing this million-dollar hurdle, to help get through that, educating yourself through things like the E-Myth and Who Moved My Cheese and things like that, is going to absolutely give you a much greater chance of coming through the other side in a very, very positive and healthy manner. And emotionally, it's going to be better for you as well.
Okay, so obviously, I think the response that, most resellers or most people that I know would have to, you know, the effect that they're reaching this hurdle is they said, well, you know, I haven't got the time, my business hasn't got the time to sit down and to, you know, do the documentation, to become organized, to be better organized. We need to keep driving sales, we need to keep growing. The bigger that we grow, the more money that we'll bring in, therefore that will all sort itself out, you know, down the track. I mean, by the sound of it, what you're saying is that, you know, somebody that keeps pushing that is just simply going to keep butting their head against it and actually making the problem worse. It's a case that obviously you need to take the time out and fix the problem so you can grow beyond that level that you're talking about. Is that a fair statement?
It's absolutely a fair statement. It is 100% a fair statement. Think of it this way. If you're a small, medium business provider, while you go up against a company that is much larger than yours, right? Your company has three or four techs. Their company has 45, 50 techs. Now, what do you find out about that company? The reason you're going to get the business from the end client is they say, you know, that big company, we felt like a number. That big company, they have all these policies and procedures in place, and they're expensive, and they're much more expensive than you. And you're looking at the situation like, oh, yeah, I mean, these guys are just, they're so bureaucratic. They can't get out of their way. They can't figure out what they're doing. They're so expensive. I'm gonna get this account. And you do. Now, the reason that bigger company is that way is because they learned along the way, because they've gotten burned by certain mistakes, that they have to have certain policies and procedures in place, that they need to take the time to do it right so that they can do it consistently. But when you're smaller, you don't necessarily need to take that time to do it consistently because you have visibility in everything in your company. But as your company grows and you no longer can literally reach around with your arms and touch everything that is involved with the company, you have to accept the fact that you have to rely upon policies and procedures. Otherwise, you cannot grow. It's that simple. If you cannot delegate, you cannot grow. And if you cannot execute to the same level of quality, you will not grow well. So what happens is you have to give up some control. You have to be able to trust other people to do jobs. You have to accept the fact that you may hire three people eventually to do the job that you were doing by yourself, and that's okay. So you're not going to have the same profit margins. You're not going to be able to do the same thing in the same amount of time. You're not going to be able to execute in the same manner. Now, some companies, when they're faced with this, Robert, some companies said, well, you know what? I don't want that. And they do what the E-Myth calls getting small again. And they say, no, I'm going to just be me, one-person shop. I'm going to be a lifestyle business. And that's okay, too, as long as it's a conscious choice.
Okay. So I think that what you're saying basically is that, you know, we have to recognize that we're getting to this level, which is, you know, the signs of frustration and you know, the business becoming more difficult. Obviously, then that it's a case of moving towards the implementation of better documentation, better systems, and also delegation of that information. And again, I suppose it's a case that in a lot of businesses, what they're not doing is they're not taking that time out to review their business to work out the goals that they're trying to achieve. They're just so busy with their nose to the grindstone day in and day out trying to make ends meet or trying to grow a bigger business that basically, there's a lot to be said for the idea of creating the vision and also, you know, projecting that vision onto the employees so that everybody's pulling in the right direction. I mean, is that sort of what you're saying in summary?
Yeah, and I think that makes sense. It's kind of like, I think one of the most important questions a business person can ask themselves is why? Well, I'm growing my business. Do you want to grow your business? Well, yes. Why? Well, because I want to make more money. Okay? That's an assumption, first of all. Your assumption is that you're going to actually make more money if your business is growing. And they look at you funny. And you say, well, you know, right now your business has $300,000 in revenue. And how much money are you earning as the owner? Well, I'm keeping about 100 of that.
great. So you're making $100,000 on $300,000. That's huge profit margin. Do not assume that if your business makes $900,000 in revenue, that you're going to keep $300,000. I think we all know that that's not true. In fact, it's probably closer to the truth that when you get to that $1 million in sales, you're probably only making maybe $120,000, $150,000. In fact, you might even be making less than the $100,000 that you're making today. So are you sure you want to grow? Because you might not make more money. Well, I'll be able to sell it for $10 million. Okay, are you sure about that? And is that really what you want to do? And if so, why? And what you end up getting to with the question of why at every stage, Robert, is the business owner can then say to themselves and identify why they went into business in the first place. I know a business owner right now. He has he's a teenage son who's 16 or about to turn 16, and he has another son who is 11 or 12. And he's at the point in his business where he's ready to check out. He doesn't want to be there anymore on a daily basis because he wants to be able to, you know, take the son to their sporting events, travel with the children, and do all of these things. He's more excited about that than he is about his business. It's not about how much revenue the business makes. It's not about how much money he makes. It's about being able to do that. So how can you do that? And it might mean making the business small. It might mean growing the business. It might mean selling the business. It might mean bringing on a manager. It might mean all these different things. But it starts with the why. And that's the self-discovery that a business owner has to make, so they can successfully go through the other side. Because ultimately, they're the ones who are going to define what success means.
Okay. So I think, again, it's a case of – so if you were to work with these sort of people, what sort of process do you take them through? What would your level and what to see your, you know, what sort of advice and processes would you be taking them through just to get them started? You know, if someone's come to you and said, look, I recognize that I'm approaching this $1 million hurdle, I'd like to, you know, get some advice from you, Matt, or get you on board to assist us with achieving, getting me over this hurdle. What's a typical process that you work through with these sort of people?
So the first thing I would have them do is really do that self-discovery, right? You know, why? And ask all the whys. Why are you running a business? You know, you want to make this money. Why do you want to make this money? You know, oh, I want to sell it. Why do we want to sell it? You know, all these questions. Find out all the whys. What really motivates this person? Make sure that they're in. Make sure that they understand what they're about to undertake. Second is you know, really lay out for them what's at stake and what it's going to take, and the fact that it's probably going to seem like it's getting worse before it gets better. So the second step is really understanding. And then the third step is really beginning piece by piece to document the business. And most often, the part that is the most difficult thing to document is what's in the owner's head. And I can give you an example of that. But after you document the business, then it's a matter of mapping out a plan on paper that takes your business from where it is today in revenue to $3 million in sales. What does that look like? If I'm doing $3 million in sales, we're doing this many projects on a monthly basis. To do this many projects on a monthly basis, we need this amount of technical staff. We're going to have this amount of customers to support them. We're going to need this amount of staff. We're going to have these types of expenses in terms of monitoring tools and help desk software and things like that. And then from a sales perspective, we're going this much sales activity, and this is how much we're going to probably expect one salesperson to do, so we're going to need three salespeople, and you basically back into that. We're going to be making $3 million a year, which means we're going to be earning about $600,000 a month, and we're probably going to be spending about $500,000 a month to do it, or $450,000 a month to do it, and what that looks like. Even if it's sketched out roughly, there needs to be a plan, because it's easier to adjust the plan than to have no plan. And those really are the four steps. It's simply recognizing, then understanding, you know, recognizing why you're doing it, having some understanding about what lies ahead, documenting everything that you possibly can, and then making a plan to execute. And at a basic level, that's what you're going to do. It's probably a lot easier to do that with a business coach or somebody. You can do it yourself, but you absolutely have to go through those steps. I'll give you a real quick, simple example of what this looks like. Business owner is a salesperson too. Business owner goes and he sells. He meets with the customer and he identifies what their needs are. He decides what they're what he's going to recommend to them. He writes a proposal, delivers the proposal, and then starts ordering equipment and hardware and software and everything. And maybe somebody else does that for him. And maybe he's involved with the implementing of that technology as well. But let's say he has techs to do that. He's big enough where he has techs to do all the, you know, all the implementation. He doesn't have to do that part. There's still at least three or four people who are going to be working at that company when it's a $2 million company that do that job that he did himself. Because there's a pre-sales technical support that he had. There's a salesperson themselves. There's a pre-sales technician. There was a post-sales technician or sales technician that is going to assess what technology has to go in that proposal. Then there is an implementation team that has to kind of authorize that, make sure that they're on the schedule. And you have all these different people. You probably have a purchasing person that's just going to do the purchasing. Maybe they're not a technical person, so they got to work with the pre-sales technical engineer to figure that out. So you have all these different people swapping information about this one customer proposal that goes out to the door. And this is something that you just were able to do all yourself. And now you need four people to do it. And that sounds terribly inefficient, but you need to be able to do it to be able to grow. So that's just one example of how this hurdle kind of manifests itself. And you have to document each part of that sales process to the minutia. And you figure out, well, this is a job. This is a role. This is an individual. And then you can start making your plan.
Okay, so what about the scenario too? Would you be recommending that people not there? Obviously, you're talking about the option of them getting to the hurdle and deciding whether to get bigger, put the processes in place, or obviously to get smaller and work out exactly what they want to do. But is also maybe an option in all of this to merge with another business, perhaps?
Absolutely, absolutely. Merging with another business is fantastic, but you know, it's a great way to grow a company. The challenge you have with merging a business is you're really taking two individuals who essentially have to figure out this problem for themselves and have different perspectives on the problems, different perspectives on the way the process and procedures need to be. And then so they you know, you have a partner in the sense that you're working together to solve the problems, but you're coming at it from two different places. So it doesn't make the job, for every bit that it makes the job easier, it makes the job harder. So it can absolutely be argued that it doesn't help at all in terms of getting through this hurdle. But there's some aspects of it where you have, you know, you have the collaborative effect, you have an equal. You know, but if you're buying somebody up, you're just kind of saying, well, this is the way we're going to do it now. Sometimes that works easier. But the partnerships are very, very difficult to manage properly. Again, a really good idea to get a business coach, to get an advisor, to get somebody to help you through that process. And by the way, make no mistake, that the process of buying another company is almost as complex as buying a home or getting married or having a child. All of these life things that happen are very, very distracting from your business. And it's very easy to be, you know, trending one way and then dive into this other activity and you're taking your eye off the sales, you're taking your eye off some of the other aspects of the company. And so now it's not on the same growth trend that it was. So it's very easy to get yourself completely derailed and distracted by something like a merger or acquisition. But it's a very valid strategy to grow. My advice is to absolutely go through this hurdle, at least as much to document everything and understand how you're going to grow, get that map, and then acquire other companies if you're able to do so from a cash position that will mold to that business model and mold to the solutions that you had. You might get some new ideas, but essentially you're adjusting your plan, not throwing it out and not relying on somebody else to figure it out for you.
Okay. So I think that, like I said, there's in obviously as the industry matures, that a lot of people are obviously looking at and hopefully asking this question, why? And I think that's obviously the overriding guidance that they need to have is if they're going to merge their business or get smaller or get, you know, larger, at the end of the day, they need to make sure that they've got their goals in mind and make sure that they obviously work for them correctly. So that's obviously an important thing that we need to highlight. So I think there's a lot of good advice there. So I'd just like to turn to another topic for a little while. In your latest book, you talk about building, a sales team, and hopefully a lot of people out there have the incentive now to reach that million-dollar hurdle. But to reach that level, they obviously looking at improving their sales typically. What's your response to someone who say, well, if I'm looking to hire my first salesperson, should I be going out and reading, a book about building a sales team like you've just created?
Absolutely. In fact, that's one of the main drivers of the book is hiring that first salesperson. Just like you want to document everything of your company and have it mapped out of how you're going to grow. Even if you're a $300,000 company, you have a map of how you're going to get to $3 million. Just like that, before you hire a salesperson, you need to have at least a vision and understanding of how your sales team is going to look and what you need to do as a company before you're ready to even interview salespeople. And all of that becomes very important, and all of that is covered in the book. It essentially has four sections. It is preparing your company to grow. It is attracting salespeople. It is managing salespeople, and it is understanding salespeople. And all of this is integral to your ability to build a sales organization within your company, which is ultimately what you're going to do. There's one person, 10 people in that sales organization. You have to kind of have an understanding of what it's going to look like. So there's a chapter called Hiring Your Salespeople. There's an entire section of the qualities of salespeople and what to look out for in terms of their personalities and what makes them tick to help you figure out what's the best fit for your company as that first salesperson and beyond. So absolutely, it is 100% applicable to somebody in that situation.
Okay, so I mean, can you give us a bit of an overview as to, what the process is or what's involved in obviously getting a salesperson? Because typically if you're let's look at the small business that's, the owner's doing the whole thing, is doing the sales, has built up the repertoire with the customers, is comfortable to an extent doing sales and now wants to offload that. What do they need to start doing?
Well, the first thing that they need to do is prepare their company to grow, which goes back to documenting your sales process, documenting every step of what it is you do. You need to answer this question. How are your products and services sold? You also need to answer the question, what does your company sell? Sometimes that is, what does it not sell? What does it sell? How is it sold? Why do customers buy it? You need to be able to answer that question very clearly in a well-documented way, and you need to be able to explain that to any candidate or salesperson coming in the door. The next thing is understanding the personality of salespeople and understanding that you're going to have two new hats when you hire a salesperson, two new hats that you never had before. Hat number one is that of a sales trainer. Hat number two is that of a sales manager. Now, you probably, if you're a technician turned business owner, like most folks out there, you have no experience with either hat. So it's important to understand that, recognize that, and know that you're going to need those two hats. Now, as far as the training, sometimes depending on the salesperson's experience, you might need to train them in basic sales skills. You also need to train them on what it is that you sell. You also need to train them on how it is that your company sells it. And you need to train them on why your customers buy it. Regardless of their experience, regardless of their industry knowledge, they need training in all four of those areas on a continual basis, the amount of which will vary depending upon their experience and industry knowledge. But they will absolutely need training in all of those areas. As far as management, I believe in daily interaction with salespeople, quick daily interaction. I believe in weekly status updates and pipeline reviews, and certainly monthly and quarterly management meetings with sales staff as well. So these are two very serious jobs, and if you don't take either one of them seriously, you will also have a $50,000 education like I did in my business. So it's really, really important that you are prepared to bring people on and you understand that you don't just hire a salesperson because you don't feel like doing sales. No one's going to do a better job than you selling your company, period. So you have to be prepared and have to be ready to put in the work for salespeople. And a lot of times when people say, I want to hire a salesperson, really what they should do is they should hire another technician and they themselves fall more into the sales role. But that's, you know, that's something that you have to look at on an individual company by company basis.
I mean, obviously that seems to be the growth stage for most people, is like, you know, they start out as themselves and they're doing the whole lot, and then they need to offload one or the other, and typically they would tend to say, well, I'm not any good at sales, and therefore I should bring on a skilled salesperson to do that. And that's obviously where they can start getting into issues, because they probably don't appreciate that they're the best salesperson to their customers, and they've already built up and gone through all the hard yards to get in with the customer, for the customer to be comfortable with them. And then by bringing somebody else in, and not giving them the skills and not giving them the training and not giving them the culture, can basically, you know, ruin that in a very short period of time, and obviously impact sales rather than grow it as what they expected. So, I mean, you obviously, again, comes back to that question about why is, you know, what do you want as a business owner, and what do you think works? But as you say, obviously the important thing is the constant feedback, because it's a case of not abdicating that that role or that, you know, that part of the business. You still need to be involved with it. So again, initially you may think that perhaps you're doing less work, but initially I would guess by what you're saying is you actually end up probably doing a little bit more, with the idea that eventually down the track you're going to make it easier by systemizing it. I mean, is that a fair comment?
Yeah, it's definitely fair. I mean, the growth, some people say, hey, I'm a one-person shop. Who's the first person I should hire? Should be a technician or an assistant? And I answer that question by saying, well, what does your desk look like? You know, is it very neat and organized? And you don't really have a lot of piles, and the piles that you do have one or two pieces of paper on them, and everything is under control? Well, then by all means, hire the technician. But if it's a complete mess and you know, you have stacks and stacks of papers that are important, that are on your desk, that eventually months later you look through and you realize something that you should have done is now irrelevant because it's been in that pile so long, well, then you need to hire an assistant. And you probably need to hire an assistant and a technician or a few technicians before you get ready to hire that salesperson, because sales, and this is what a lot of IT business owners don't want to hear, but it's true, sales is the higher order skill. It is easier to teach somebody a technical skill than it is to teach somebody to be a good salesperson. And the truth is, all sales is, it's not something you do to a customer, it's something you do for a customer. All sales is helping a customer understand how they would better their business by partnering with you and what your services bring to the table. Nobody's going to believe that more than the business owner. Nobody's going to be able to demonstrate that more than the business owner. It's not about used car slick sales techniques and this is how you do the Ben Franklin close and all this stuff. That's not what it's about. It's about understanding your customer and really trying to help them out. And nobody's going to be more passionate than the business owner. And the only time the business owner should elevate out of sales is when every bit of the company is running without his needing to constantly be involved with the day-to-day operational management of that department of the company. And that's true whether we're talking about financial, operations, or sales. Then and only then should that business owner elevate him or herself to owner level, entrepreneur level, as the E-Myth calls it, and take him or herself out of the sales role.
Okay, so I suppose another quick question I'd have for you is, you know, we're talking about the human side of sales and salespeople and those sort of things, but in your experience, what are some technology tools that you know, a business owner can use to better help them, you know, track sales and that sort of stuff within their business, and also when they look at bringing on salespeople? Is it just a matter of getting standard, you know, pipelining tools, or is there something in your experience that you found that works really
sure.
well?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the general tools like Salesforce.com, you know, is probably one of the industry leaders, but there are literally hundreds of CRM, customer relationship management software systems out there. And a variety of them, you know, help the salespeople track all of their opportunities and work them through the process of the sales funnel. Some of them are very simple. Some of them are very, customizable. There's also, you know, with the for the in the IT community, with the Autotasks, the ConnectWise, and the TigerPaws of the world, these companies all have within them mechanisms to do this and to track this. Some of those companies do a better job than other, and that's a subjective quality, because depending on where your company is at this moment is whether or not you're going to say that one of these companies is far and away better, or this one's enough and that one's just overkill. Again, think about not only where your company is when you're evaluating these software systems for your business, but where your company is going to, and are the systems and the components in place to track in an integrated system, not only today, but where I'm going to be in a year or 3 years. So you have to evaluate it from that perspective. The main point is to have something, some sort of system where every sales activity is tracked. If you cannot, business owner, as a sales manager, track sales activity, be able to have predictable, understand how many opportunities are in each stage of the funnel of the sales process, you have no control and no visibility into your organization. It's absolutely important that it's tracked in something.
So I think that, again, something else I think that you probably recommend as well is that if you haven't got these systems in place or you're struggling to work out what works for you, there are a lot of people who are in the industry who are successful in their business who are using these tools already. I don't see that it should stop you from going and tapping those people on the shoulder and inviting them out for a coffee or whatever and basically picking their brain. Most of the people that I know will be more than happy to give you the benefit of their experience in how these tools work, what's good, what's bad, what can be improved, and how they went about it. So I think that there's something that you could definitely leverage is the peers who are already doing that, in my opinion. I mean, again, is that something you'd be recommending as well?
Absolutely. I mean, the more knowledge you have, the better. The more information you can gather, the better, and then you can make your own decision. I mean, that's what learning is all about, right? It's not necessarily, going to one source, getting one version of the truth and saying that is the truth. Sometimes that's enough, and sometimes that's all people want to make time for. But if you really want to learn how to manage a sales team, certainly my book can help, but don't just buy my book on sales management, right? But buy other books on sales management. Read about it. Join groups on LinkedIn. Talk to your peers. What do they do? Talk to companies that are much larger than you and say, hey, when you were here, what did you do? What did you wish you did, back then? What would you recommend to me? And you're going to get a world of advice out there. And what's really interesting is you're going to take all of this advice and all of this knowledge and you're going to figure out what best applies to your company. And guess what? You can change your mind along the way. That's what being the business owner is all about. You can try something out based on all the information I had. This seemed like the best thing to do at the time. And then 6 months in, a year in, we got to do something different because we're not getting the results that we wanted to get. So that's really what I recommend to anybody is seek knowledge. Don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid to chat with other people and be real with them and say, hey, listen, I hired my first salesperson 4 times. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. You're a $10 million company. You've obviously figured this out. What am I doing wrong or what advice? I'd be happy to buy you a cup of coffee or lunch and let's chat about it. So, use those relationships, leverage those groups, learn, look up books that are popular and read what the popular authors have to say and figure out what you want to do from there.
Well, I think, as you said, there's plenty of opportunity and there's plenty of, obviously, the ConnectWise and those sort of guys have their conferences. There's conferences like the SMB Nation. There's opportunities all over the place to network with your peers, and part of the stuff is that if you've got your nose so close to the grindstone that you're not able to make time to go out and participate in these and benefit from the hallway networking, well then you're not doing what your competitors are doing. Other people are spending the time at these conferences building up their contacts, building up their knowledge, and improving their processes by looking at what the best in the industry are doing. If you're just spending your day, day to day, nose on the grindstone, again, it's not necessarily making things better. You, in some cases, probably blunting your weapons. So I think that, again, you probably agree that part of the education process is not only just the book side, but obviously attending the conferences and, getting involved with the community.
Absolutely, absolutely. Getting involved with the community is absolutely essential. And be careful, right? Because I know some folks you know, they're out there and they'll go to the TigerPaw user conference or the Autotask conference or the ConnectWise conference, and that's fantastic if they're using that product and they want to talk to everybody else who is in the room who's using that product. That's excellent. But understand that whenever you have a conference that is singularly focused, you're going to have the challenge that you're going to get a slighted version of truth. And I know all of those companies, and I believe you're going to get a great conference experience from all of those. And I think if you're using any one of those products, you should absolutely go, and it's going to benefit you. But don't think that that's the only source of information. That's why, I'm obviously a big fan of SMB Nation conferences, for more of a horizontal approach. There's other groups out there that have conferences, but go to other conferences and user groups and, figure out what other people are doing. And sometimes you're going to find that it affirms what you've learned at the first source. Other times you're going to find that it's going to completely alter your thinking. But both are excellent. Both are excellent because at the end of the day, you are more knowledgeable, you are more powerful, and you're able to grow your company the way you want to grow it and get out of it what you want to get out of it.
Okay, well, I want to be respectful of your time, and obviously you've dedicated an amount to us today. Firstly, thank you very much for the time that you've taken, out of your busy day and to help to give the listeners the information that you have. Is there any, do you want to give us a wrap up, some final thoughts? And also before we head off into our day, is what's the best way for people to get in contact with you to find out more information about the books that you've created or, basically get you on board if they need help?
Sure. So I'll say thank you again for having me, Robert. I really appreciate it. Happy to be on. I know you're a real head of the community out there in Australia, and it's really an honor to be recording this with you, and I appreciate it. Hopefully, we'll be heading down to Australia next year, and looking very much forward to that. As far as getting in touch with me, the best way is Matt, M-A-T-T, at ambitionmission.com. I invite anybody listening to this to go ahead and find me on LinkedIn and send me an invitation. I'd be happy to connect with you there. As far as purchasing my books, one can go to Amazon.com, obviously. You can go to my website, ambitionmission.com. They also are available on SMBNation.com. And what I'll tell you there is if you're not already a member of the SMB Nation tribe, go to SMBNation.com. Click the Join the Tribe, get a login, and once you're logged in, you will get a 25% discount on each of my books. And if you're able, if you do that, that will make it the cheapest way, the least expensive way for you to get my books, if that's what you're interested in. Other than that, I want to say thanks again, and really happy to talk to you guys, and hopefully I'll hear from you soon.
Excellent. Well, like I said, we look forward to hopefully seeing you down our way. I know it's a long trip on the plane, but we can assure you that it's all worth it. Just make sure that you come when the weather's probably not as wet as it is at the moment. But I think it's pretty cold and snowy over there in the US. So, again, it may be an opportunity to change one form of precipitation to another. I'll just round off today and say thank you very much, everybody, for listening. And please keep in touch for future podcasts. This podcast has been brought to you by the SharePoint Operations Guide. For more information, visit www.wssops.com. To provide feedback on this podcast, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.